This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My name is Alan Scott. This is the place where government actions come face-to-face with business decisions. Online at www.bgov.com. And of course, on the air right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. A little later in the program, we'll speak with senior economic analyst Dr. Neela Richardson about a recent drop in resale homes. The month of June has shown a decline in those resales. She'll explain why. We'll also discuss how Congress is looking to implement changes with Freddie and Fannie. Senior finance analyst Katie North will be here to help us celebrate the 3-year anniversary of Dodd-Frank. It's been 3 years already. 5 years since the financial crisis. What's been implemented? What's left to be done? And have those detractors come into the favorable column? We'll find out shortly. But we'll kick off the program with our Director of Legislative Affairs, Mr. Lauren Duggan, discussing what Congress has left to cover prior to the August break. How are you?
Very well, Alan. How are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. So would you say that keeping the doors open is a big thing? And they plan on doing that?
It's certainly a big thing, but they have time on that because the federal government's fiscal year goes through September 30th. They don't have to deal with that before they leave for the August recess and probably won't even take votes on that. So it's something that is on a few people's mind, but it's not topping the congressional agenda by any means before they leave for their recess.
Something else, and I know we have a lot of things that we're going to talk about here, and we'll try to be fast on this, but sequestration. Sequestration kind of came in like a lion, but is kind of just hanging around right now. No one's really doing much about it. In fact, the White House has now implemented Furlough Fridays, making sequestration fun.
You get time off certainly if you're a federal worker, but you don't get paid. So I don't know how fun that is for the workers who are actually going through it, obviously. In terms of the effects of sequestration, what's really happened, there's been some high-profile things. Remember, right after sequestration was implemented, there was trouble at the airports.
Sure.
People's flights were being delayed, and air traffic control wasn't running smoothly. So that was the one thing they really addressed legislatively after sequestration was implemented. The rest of it's just taking effect, and
yeah.
Some agencies are finding ways to manage their time. The IRS canceled one of its furlough days, which suggests that they were able to,
sure,
to marshal their resources a little differently. In terms of fixing it, it doesn't seem like it's going to be fixed before the end of the year. I mean, that would obviously surge a bunch of money back in. And if agencies are living without it right now, I don't know that they're going to undo it. Democrats talk a lot about undoing sequestration, making sure that for next year we can spend more money as opposed to the lower allocations of spending that we have to live under for next year. So that debate still has to be reconciled. What are we going to do starting October 1st?
Don't know how pressing the issue is. Obviously, it's something that they want to address. However, the economy is starting to turn around. Even in the eyes of sequestration, I'm wondering if that will play into any further debate about the topic.
It could play into sequestration. It could play into the tax overhaul debate. It could touch a lot of things. You know, maybe the improving economy and improving federal receipts makes the budgetary pressures a little different, a little less in the forefront of people's minds. So
right,
that could definitely have an effect.
Back in February, Congress suspended the debt ceiling to give them a little bit more time to work on deficit reduction.
Right.
The vote on coming up with a new number has kind of been elusive at this point. What's the holdup?
The holdup is actually a good thing. That means that we don't need to borrow more money right away. The Treasury Department has a bag of tools, basically, they use to keep borrowing going once we hit the debt limit. And then we've had some improving federal receipts, particularly from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. The two mortgage giants have been giving more money to the federal government than we anticipated. So that's delayed the day of reckoning. That vote still will have to happen sometime this fall. It'll be accompanied by other debates about budget policies and things like that. There will be a debate around it. I don't know if it's going to be a showdown or not, but it's interesting that that's a big deal that no one's talking about going into the August recess. If you think back 2 years ago when we had a debt limit going right into the August recess, people were thinking it could be calamitous if we didn't do something about it. We're not having that debate, at least at this juncture. Maybe later in the year we will.
Again, in the eyes of sequestration, makes one sit back and go,
We got cuts going on all over the place, yet this number is still elusive at this point, and it's a good thing.
Well, exactly, on the debt ceiling. But I would say, you know, one of the things about sequestration is some of the programs that are affected may not have the best advocates talking about it, showing the impact person to person or state to state. I think my colleagues here at Bloomberg Government are marshaling things at the big level. We're looking at the big picture. How does this affect defense contracting? You know, there's certainly people out there saying that the costs of sequestration aren't always being discussed at the person level, for example.
Right. So speaking of our Bloomberg colleagues, there are quite a few people who have been writing a lot about healthcare.
Yes.
Specifically Obamacare, the delay in the employee mandate. House voted to say, yep, we can hold off on another year. What's next in that process, and will it be good news or bad?
Well, I think the House did two things. They voted on a bill that said we're going to go along with the Obama administration's employer mandate. But they said if you're getting rid of that one for a year, you should also get rid of the individual mandate for the year. And that's the requirement that every person buy health insurance for themselves and their dependents. You know, that's one of the major elements of the Obamacare or Affordable Care Act, was getting more people on insurance. So they created these exchanges that states will run, that people can buy health insurance. And the mandate is to put healthier people into the system. So if you're a healthy person, they want you to buy into the system because that spreads the risk around. You're less of a risk, and it makes the whole system a little bit healthier, is the argument. So the House has passed these two bills that are now one bill, saying no employer mandate or individual mandate in 2014. What's next? There could be more debates on whether to fund Obamacare into next year. The Republicans are trying to block funding for that in the House. The Senate obviously wants that funding to go forward.
Sure.
That could come up in the continuing resolution and elsewhere. You know, there's also a question about, can these exchanges be up and running in time by October 1 to start enrolling? They don't take effect until January, but there's a three-month enrollment period. And my colleague Peter Gosselin is looking into that sort of that aspect of the healthcare law, along with Matt Berry and other people. So there's a lot to still happen on Obamacare. The next few months are big for launching it if it's going to take effect in January.
A lot of jobs that need to be created and are now on hold as a result of the delay. These healthcare navigators that are being created all over the country now, as these exchanges are now being thought about assembled.
To be fair, a lot of employers have been trying to wrestle with the mandate. And one of the reasons the Obama administration delayed it is there's information reporting requirements and other things that people have to do as employers. And one of the things Valerie Jarrett said in her blog post was, we've listened to businesses. They say they're not ready. We need to make changes. That's why we're delaying the employer mandate for a year. So
one of the there's a big grocer employer, a big grocery store chain, let's say, that has decided around the same time that the employee mandate goes into effect, they've decided to dump all insurance for part-time employees. Will we see more of this, do you think?
That remains to be seen. I think that's one of the things the administration is going to look at in the next year. And some members of Congress may look at tweaks to the employer mandate, which is right now if you have more than 50 employees who work more than 30 hours a week. I think those are the two numbers. Again, I defer to my colleagues for all the details
on
that. But
I just found that rather
but
interesting.
But, you know, that 30-hour threshold has been a big discussion. Are people pushing their workers to 29 to avoid getting to 30, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
It could affect hiring decisions, and that's one of the things Congress will be looking into and the administration.
What else is on the agenda as we take a look at this break, coming up on a hard break? Is there anything that you think that they should be looking at, or you feel they will probably address and resolve before they walk out the door?
I think the biggest thing that they'll resolve before they leave is student loans, which I was on with you a few weeks ago and we talked about that.
Yes,
the student loan rates that doubled from 3.4% to 6.8% on July 1.
Ouch.
For the undergraduate Stafford loans. There's a deal that's been reached by a group of bipartisan senators that should come to a vote this week, maybe next week, and then the House has shown some willingness to accept it because it's more of a market-based system, which is what the House wanted. I think that's the accomplishment that they'll walk away with. The other things that they're doing on the floor is they're trying to churn through some appropriations bills. The House may hold a few votes next week, taking aim at the IRS, you know, the ongoing investigation into what the IRS did with tax-exempt groups.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably a whole show in that, but the bills that they're going to do there are going to either cut the funding for the IRS or put new restrictions on what people at the IRS can do. So those aren't accomplishments necessarily. There'll be debates, there will be votes, but nothing's going to wind up on the law books from that debate, I would say, next week.
Director of Legislative Affairs, Mr. Lauren Duggan, always full of good news.
Hey, you said we're going to have reduced traffic. I think that's good news, right?
That is good news. You're right. And it's all thanks to you sending everyone on recess.
Happy to do it.
Thank you very much for joining me, Lauren.
Thank
I appreciate
you,
it.
This is Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact.
Well, I can't believe how the time has flown by. Our little child is now three years old, and here to tell us all about the third anniversary of Dodd-Frank implementation and how those who may have been opposed to those who are happy about it may be feeling at this point is our senior financial analyst, Miss Katie North.
Hi, Katie. Hi, Alan.
There are those who are very upset about Dodd-Frank, not necessarily fans of financial reform. Are they sitting back now going, all right, this is happening, or are they now assimilating, so to speak, saying, okay, let's just move this along?
There's still a lot of active lobbying with regards to Dodd-Frank at the regulatory level. So industry groups and folks who are concerned about some of the provisions are definitely working a lot to try and make changes mm-hmm. as the regulations are proposed through the comment letter process and through direct meetings with the regulators.
How far along are we in the process, and how much longer do we have?
We have several more years left, actually, and I don't mean just from the rule writing perspective, but from when we can say that everything is finally implemented and working and in place. We definitely have several more years left. We're about 60% of the way through some of the major actions related to financial stability and in the rule writing perspective, but it could really be 2018 actually before we see a lot of these provisions fully implemented.
So as we talk about the growing up of this Dodd-Frank, so to speak, what are some of the major milestones we've already accomplished? And give me an idea of some of the big ones that are still left to overcome.
Yeah, so one of the major milestones, I think, and sort of the hallmark of what Congress tried to do to address too big to fail is really this concept of an orderly liquidation of a major bank holding company. And so previously, you know, the FDIC could come in and resolve a single commercial bank, in all of their branches over a weekend. And customers really didn't know the difference. When it came to the financial crisis 5 years ago, that happened with very large interconnected institutions, and the FDIC and the regulators didn't feel that they had the legal authority to come in and liquidate on a broad bank holding company level basis, and certainly not when dealing with non-banks like Lehman Brothers, which was a major investment bank, not a commercial bank. And so the concept of Dodd-Frank was to really address that and to figure out how the FDIC could adapt their current process to an orderly liquidation at the bank holding company level. And that can happen now. The problem is it's not happened yet.
Right.
And we don't know how it would work. We also don't know how it would work internationally. And the FDIC has been working really hard to come up with some guidelines for how that might work. But until it happens, we don't know, you know, really how well the process will manage itself.
Whenever I hear Lehman Brothers, I think about all of my trips to New York City. There's a deli directly across the street from the front door of what was Lehman Brothers with a gigantic digital board. And I used to sit in there in that deli and eat whatever. The famous deli had pictures of famous people all over the place. And I just look at the board and go, oh, Lehman Brothers. Wonder what it would be like to work there. I don't wonder that anymore.
Not anymore.
I don't wonder that anymore.
The bankruptcy is actually still ongoing.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing that we're trying to address with Dodd-Frank is don't put him through bankruptcy. That takes years and years. We need a more orderly and rapid process to address this. And that's what this authority is meant to do.
So there are people out there, as we talked about just a moment ago, who are not necessarily fans of the implementation of Dodd-Frank and are going through the letter process to try to turn these regulations around or get people to, hey, look at us, this isn't good. One of those people is former Senator Ted Kaufman from Delaware. He's had quite a bit to say, just short of calling it a complete failure. He says the banks are still gambling with FDIC-insured money. Reform of the credit rating agencies is still way too far off. And Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, completely broken.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts?
Dodd-Frank wasn't even meant to address Fannie and Freddie. You know, that's not something that was even part of the law. So it's not something Dodd-Frank can address. It's something Congress is talking about now. And so that's going to be much further along, further down the road in the process. But when it comes to the Volcker Rule, which is what he's talking about, gambling of banks' money, that's something we've been waiting on a final rule for 2 years now. And it's also something that will take a long time to fully implement and also enforce from a regulatory perspective, which is, I think, the reason why we don't have this final rule in place. So the credit rating agency piece, you know, we've done some analysis at BGov on this. You can find it on the BGov site. It is a real challenge because there's no real agreement within the industry or the consumer groups or even the regulators themselves on what to do with the credit rating agencies. So that's a big issue, a big remaining kind of issue outstanding.
So he's probably okay with that one then. Yeah. I told you he was upset with you directly. Not necessarily true, just with Dodd-Frank. Overall, thumbs up, thumbs down, Dodd-Frank. Good thing, bad thing?
You know, there's a lot of good things in Dodd-Frank. It's a huge piece of a law, and it's unclear how all of these pieces and parts will come together and address the major issues that we had during the financial crisis. And the sad thing is the next financial crisis probably won't look the same. And so we have to ask ourselves, did we address all of the potential concerns and potential issues that could come up in a future crisis, or did we only address the things that went wrong during the last crisis? And I think that's a still big question mark, and people are still wondering.
Knee-jerk reaction or forward-looking documentation, so to speak. The economy is turning around. We were talking about that just a minute ago with Lauren Duggan. The White House is now has given a fun name to those furloughs, Furlough Fridays. What, if anything, can Dodd-Frank do to address mandatory cuts?
No, not in particular. And the financial regulatory agencies are largely unaffected by sequestration because they're not on the books. They're not on the appropriation books. And Congress doesn't decide their annual funding levels. The exception to that is the SEC and the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, which mm-hmm. both have to be reauthorized and appropriated. And so they are experiencing some sequestration cuts, but they're dealing with that by other means other than furloughs and readjusting some of their resources and funding levels because they the SEC in particular can recoup some of their costs through fees on their industries that they regulate.
Senate recently confirmed Richard Corday as the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau leader. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so it's been 2 years in coming. Richard Corday was originally proposed to lead the CFPB, and there's been a huge fight in Congress on this. And the biggest question on the Republican side is what this agency looks like, how much authority they have as Congress members to adjust their funding, which is zero. They have no authority to do that. How much say do they have in their everyday sort of regulatory structure day to day, and is there any kind of oversight? And the Republicans continue to say for the past 2 years that no, there isn't, and we want that. We aren't opposed to Richard Corday. We just want to see some more accountability. Whereas on the other side of the coin, you know, we've seen a lot of injustice with regards to consumers and the financial products that they engage in, whether that be mortgages, credit cards, or payday loans, or any of those types of things. And the single director structure was meant to be something that can get in and get working and get moving on a lot of this stuff. And the CFPB has been very successful in rulemaking to address all those issues that they've been tasked to address. Now, finally, with the threat of the nuclear option, they were able to broker a deal in the Senate and make that happen. And so I think we'll continue to see the CFPB move forward as they have been. And now they have, a legitimate director.
A legitimate director. Quote from Katie North. The CFPB now has a legitimate director. Katie, thank you very much for being a part of the program.
Thanks, Alan.
To learn more about Bloomberg Government, simply call us at 877-498-3587. Bloomberg Government.
Bloomberg Government.
Where business and politics come together. You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, where my guest right now is senior economic analyst Dr. Neela Richardson. Hello, Neela.
Hi, Alan.
So I'm perusing BGov and the news and such, and I see this breaking news banner that pops up saying that June House resales have slumped. What's this bump in the road?
Well, actually, what you're seeing is a bumpy housing market.
Okay.
Economists never promised that it was going to be an easy road to housing recovery. And though Ben Bernanke in his testimony to Congress said that housing was a bright spot, it's a bright spot that's going to dim occasionally. There are some headwinds still. And those headwinds are keeping the housing market from a steady upward path.
So is there anything in the future that may help turn this around, make it a more stable market on the rise?
Well, right now, one of the primary reasons why we're not seeing a really strong resurgence in housing is one, inventory is low, mm-hmm. which is keeping prices high and out of reach for many first-time homebuyers. First-time homebuyers are essentially locked out of the market because there's not a lot of, properties that are under $100,000. So it's ironically, prices have risen enough to secure everyone that we've reached bottom and it's good time to buy a house, but not enough to get sellers to put their houses on the market because they are still not seeing the returns that they need to sell. So we have a lopsided market where there's demand and very little supply. Also, credit. It's still really hard if you're a first-time home buyer to get a conventional mortgage. You can get an FHA loan, but you can't get easily a conventional mortgage, and so that's locking people out. In fact, all cash purchases were driving the market for a while, and investor properties were driving the market. So we haven't seen this traditional market come back in full force yet. And so last month, that's what you saw, that the traditional market wasn't making up for the shortfall in the investor purchases.
I gotcha. Let's talk about Freddie and Fannie. You know, I was talking to Katie North just a little while ago about Dodd-Frank, 3-year anniversary. And one of the things that some of the detractors are talking about is the fact that Freddie and Fannie are still broken. Of course, Dodd-Frank isn't going to do anything about that. It was never intended to fix that. But it got me thinking, what is on the horizon for Dodd-Frank? For Freddie and Fannie. Is there anything we look forward to?
Well, I think Freddie and Fannie are now profitable. I would think that would be their major characteristic rather than broken. They're still supplying mortgage credit to banks, mm-hmm. and they're still undergirding this entire mortgage system. The problem with Freddie and Fannie, it's not that they're broken, but they're too powerful still. And there are many in Congress who believe that a private market will never completely come back while Freddie and Fannie are still performing as wards of the state. And so the idea is not only to get Freddie and Fannie away from the government house, but also for some, it's to completely wind them down altogether.
Have any steps been taken to do just that?
There's a couple bills that are in play right now. There is a bipartisan bill in the Senate that was sponsored by Senator Corker and Senator Warner that would wind down Fannie and Freddie over time and replace them with what? With more government subsidy. So it would replace them with a new insurance agency that would hopefully not be as big a presence as Freddie and Fannie. There's also legislation on the House side from Representative Hinserling to also wind down Fannie and Freddie. And I hear that Democrats are coming up with their own proposal in the House to take some features of Freddie and Fannie and make them workable. So there are 3 plans in Congress now mm-hmm. that I know of that are in play. There are many more in the academic sphere that are in play, but most of them rely on some kind of wind down of these two big mortgage behemoths.
All right. Well, only time will tell, I guess. Any timetable on a wind down of any kind?
You know, we have a very crowded legislative agenda.
Yeah. And we're up on a break in just a couple of weeks.
So it's hard to know when anything is going to pass. But anything that changes how mortgages are funded in the United States significantly will have an impact on mortgage credit. There's no controversy in my mind about that. We can expect interest rates will go up if Freddie and Fannie are wound down. Now, interest rates are at historical lows, so mm-hmm. maybe they should go up a bit, and that's not unreasonable. But the transition to whatever new system that Congress wants to put in place, I think, is as important, maybe, Alan, even more important than the new system itself. What happens when we wind down Freddie and Fannie and we take up a new system? What happens in that interim period? That's mm-hmm. something I hope policymakers are very focused on.
Transition could be bumpy.
Transition could be bumpier than what we're experiencing right now.
That's just awesome. That's just awesome.
Hey, I'm more positive than usual. So.
Straight from the mouth of Dr. Neela Richardson, Senior Economic Analyst with Bloomberg Government. As always, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And with that, we put the wraps on yet another edition of Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact. Follow us on Twitter at BGov. Follow me on Twitter at Alan L. Scott. Bloomberg Government has a television program. It's called Capital Gains, seen weekly immediately following Face the Nation on WUSA 9, Sundays at 11:30. Hosted by Bloomberg Television's Peter Cook, Capital Gains, Sundays at 11:30. I'll be back next Thursday at 11 with plenty more to say about the business impact of government actions. For BGov's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, I'm Alan Scott.